Jeff Woods joins us once again. Woods, how you doing?
Great, Jason Greger. How about you?
I am. I'm doing very well. Today, I want to talk. I guess specific training and how to reduce junk sets, where you know maybe people are just wasting time with lifting weight that you know really isn't benefiting them.
Okay. All right. Well, here let me start with this. The closer that an individual works to their threshold, Greger. So all I mean by that is just working with weight loads that are closer to their maximal effort. The stimulation for muscle fibers, motor units is that much greater, and your body adapts to that kind of stress. So we have to impose enough of a stress or a stimulus, whether you're running or weight training, whatever you're doing, so that you get adaptations. If the training stimulus is really low, nothing really changes. And I want to be clear, like all movement, all exercise is good. Even if you're not wired to work out really intently, I would still encourage people to go out and have fun and just participate, obviously. It's going to be good for your health. But if your goal is to really get strong, you have to work at higher percentages of your one repetition maximum. Okay.
Now, for a lot of people, they probably don't, like, especially if you're just starting, you won't know what your one rep max is. So, obviously, you know, it takes some time to train up to it. And is there a way to get it without having to actually do your one rep max? Like, is there a formula that you can get a good ballpark figure as something on doing something five times or four? Is there a way to do it without doing one rep max?
Yeah, absolutely there is. And there's probably about 10 metabolic equations sort of designed by different exercise physiologists, but they're all to do with integers and decimal points, and they're quite tricky, frankly, to use that metabolic equation. So here's what I'd recommend. If you go online, there's all kinds of tables that will give you, like, once you do a 10 repetition max or a 5 repetition max, which is really much safer for a less experienced weight training athlete, it will spit out a number that might closely represent what your one repetition maximum would be. So I would recommend just doing that. And like I say, the heavier the weight loads that you use, like if it's a 5 repetition max chart that you're going to use for your one RM, that's going to be closer. If it's a 10 or a 15 rep table, you know, it has a greater probability of being off.
Yes.
And especially for inexperienced lifters, because their biomechanical patterns, Greger, they're not very good. And even if we were to take a novice weight training athlete, start them off, like in over 2 or 3 weeks, just because they develop better, you know, patterning, they start pushing more weight. And it's certainly not because they had adaptations take place where they're actually stronger in that period. They're just more efficient.
Jeff Woods from Custom Fit joins us. Now, what about the direct method for one rep max versus an indirect testing method?
Okay, very good. You've done your homework. The direct method is the trial and error process where, let's say that you're going to just, you want to see what your maximal effort is on a deadlift or a squat. So you would warm up properly and you, as a trainer, would have the athlete go through and do one repetition through a full range of motion. And you might take 3 to 5 minutes between each lift, Greger.
Okay.
So, and then you'd slowly work your way up to your maximal effort. As soon as you have 2 failed attempts, that last lifted amount would be your direct trial and error one repetition max. Now, the indirect method is just what we just talked about, and that's using the charts or tables or doing the metabolic equation from 5 reps, 10 or 15 reps to calculate your 1 RM. So that would be the difference in the two types of one repetition max testing.
So it's safe to say then for the novice lifter, it's safer to go with the indirect method rather than the accurate ones to start off anyway, and then you could retest yourself once you become more comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's much safer, Greger. I'd highly recommend that strategy for certain.
Now, how about outlining a program then that for the one rep max and using the percentages for a power athlete like a football or a hockey player compared to an endurance athlete? How different is it?
Okay, well, here's the thing. So with that power athlete, they're looking to improve quick, explosive power. So with that, their program design with heavier weight loads is going to have them fail probably somewhere between 1 and 5 repetitions. Okay, so when you're lifting that kind of weight and you're trying to solicit more motor units and fast twitch muscle fiber to work, you have to take a longer time between sets. And it's not for everybody. Some people are wired where they want to, you know, go faster. But if you want to be more powerful, you want to be faster, you have to lift heavy, fail in that repetition zone, and you're going to take a lot more time between sets. At the other end of the spectrum, if you're an endurance athlete, like a marathon runner, for example, there would still be some relevance to having a phase of training before you start to run competitively in your marathons for the season, like to do some of that power work, the same as our power athlete, because it makes endurance runners more economical. So all I mean by that is that your stronger endurance athlete can run a desired like pace, but do it with a lower energy cost. So that runner is what we call more economical. They have better run economy. But then just prior to competition, they may be doing sets of much higher, like 12 to 15 repetitions. This is where the power athlete would never entertain that. So the marathon runner might have a balance of high repetition and low repetition training within their spectrum of preparation for a marathon.
Jeff Woods joins us from Custom Fit. Want to look good, eat good, feel good? Go to CustomFit.ca. Now, you talked about, you know, if you want to get faster, you obviously have to get stronger. But then you've still got to work on the speed, whether you're a skater or a runner. Ultimately, you still have to do some of that activity. No, or are you a believer that if you just go simply get stronger and do a lot of leg work, that if you do leg work for 3 months, you might only have to do two weeks of actual on-ice skating to see the difference?
Well, I wouldn't say that, Gregor. I mean, I want to be clear about this, too. I mean, for most elite-level athletes, whether they're hockey players or sprinters, I mean, genetically, they were pretty quick. Now, with the strength training, can we get a little bit more powerful as a skater, like, from a stop to start into, like, your faster speeds on the ice by strength training? Certainly. If you're a sprinter, can I get a little faster out of the blocks? You know, with that kind of power development, yes. But for the most part, they're already gifted athletes. So you still have to do sport-specific conditioning. That's like without question. And the other thing with this type of strength training too, Gregor, it also helps to minimize injury. It helps our bodies to tolerate the stress and the forces of each one of those activities, because over a rigorous long-term playing season, you know, our bodies start to break down, and athletes actually get weaker over their playing seasons because they don't have a chance to train. So that's why the preseason conditioning is so important, because they do start to lose their strength over the course of the playing season.
Woods, as always, great stuff. Does using ladders help you?
Well, here's the thing with ladders. Ladders will help to improve your agility, and it's a learned behavior where you're working through various patterns. It wouldn't really make you faster per se, but it will teach you how to control your body moving in different directions with greater efficiency. It's the power work in that 1 to 5 repetition range and getting stronger that's going to make you a little bit more powerful. And plyometric training, jump training, that would have a greater influence on being faster than the agility ladder.
Woods, Dean wanted me to ask you that question. So
yeah, I'm sure he did. He said he was going to call in. He likes to cause trouble.
Woods, I really appreciate it on the one rep max. It's a good way to change it up and can eliminate, as you talked about, the junk reps earlier on, where sometimes if you're doing the same thing, eventually you're not gaining gains. So you got to shock the body a little bit and sometimes go heavier for shorter reps.
Absolutely, Gregor. And it does sort of improve the quality of your workouts, because you're doing work that matters. You're going to get a return on time for sure.
Appreciate it, Jeff. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Gregor. Take care.